Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode number 206 of the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. I'm Al and I'm joined by Anton.
Hello, Alistair. And we are not joined by the lovely Mike this week. Any clue where he's been at the moment?
Well, yes. I think he actually may have said last week that he was heading over to Korea for work. Unfortunately, well, Mike has gone and pulled a Mike. He landed in South Korea. They did go for a day trip to the demilitarized zone, that's easy for me to say, and somehow Mike has managed to end up wandering across the wrong border, and he's now stuck in North Korea, so don't know if we'll see him again. To be honest, they may keep him for their own, as, you know, they need music. Mike is a talented songwriter. He might just be, you know, brought in to write their next Eurovision entry. I don't know.
You know, he'll at least be number one, and you know, he is prone to, you know, having, you know, using the hands for left and rights, but, you know, that ended up on the, you know, north side of the border.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping we get him back. Fingers crossed. I'm sure he'll be just fine. He can, like, I don't know, he's small, he can crawl under a fence or something. He'll be back for next week. I'm pretty confident about this. But in the meantime, do I even need to ask you, Anton, what have you been playing this week?
It has been entirely Tears of the Kingdom. It's been a stupendous amount, but I'm going to ask you first, because I haven't seen your little name pop up in the corner much this week.
No, I've not. It's been a busy week. I've had Kiddo with me, and then we've been trying to make our way through the various Guardians of the Galaxies and, oh, what you call the Avengers movies, because we're going to watch Guardians 3 on Thursday. So evenings have largely been focused on movies, so I've not actually got to play much Switch. I've played about 2 hours of Zelda today, and I'd say, I don't think it's giving anything away to say, I've just landed in Hyrule. There you go, that's where
Excellent.
I am. Right at the beginning still, pretty much, as far as I'm concerned.
So I have maybe put in about 20 hours into it. I have not played my Switch this much, probably since launch. It's been an intense week, and that's like on top of work, so just squeezing it in every gap. I've been like going to business meetings, and then in my like blazer, I've had a Switch. I have not been like this in years. And what I've got to say is, you know, I don't really want to give too much away about this game, because I think anybody that has a Switch needs to pick this up. You know, you only need like, you know, one of each organ, so figure it out. Nevertheless, is that, you know, everybody in my flat has been playing it. So there's three of us, and all of us have been playing it entirely differently from the get-go. We have somebody that has went crazy into side quests and are just doing that sort of stuff in an entirely different part of the map that I haven't even been to yet. Have one person that's chasing down the main story, and then, as my gameplay style's been described, Banjo-Kazooie nuts and boltsing it, so I've just been making nonsense, and that's just been bliss. And what's amazing and just unexpected is they've managed to take a game that all of us considered one of the greatest games of all time and make it look like a beta test for what they've just put out. I'm very impressed, Al.
That is really good to hear. I mean, I know it's been getting rave reviews. We've talked about this. I've pretty much seen anytime the Switch has been on at all since launch, I've just seen ping after ping in the corner of so-and-so is on playing Tears of the Kingdom. So-and-so is on playing Tears of the Kingdom. It's all anybody is doing. And it's great. It's wonderful. It's this big, happy club of people all gaming. I just feel like I'm far behind, and I know that Mike is even further behind, because Mike took a Switch with him. He sat in an airplane for 14 hours and didn't play it at all. If you're a Patreon, you can listen to Last Call. He'll explain why. It's a very Mike explanation. But yeah, he's not touched it since he left.
Yeah, so the kind of log line I heard from Mike is he only got to the second shrine. So I like to imagine he spent
all
14 hours.
No, he's not
found
the second shrine yet.
Oh, he's not found it yet. I like to
he's
think
looking
it's
for the
14
shrine.
Hours of searching for it. That's the Mike move I expect.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'd expect. No, he just hasn't picked it up because he's got mic issues. That's all I'm going to say. If you listen to Last Call and you're Patreon, you get that show, you'll understand what the mic issues are.
Scandalous. Scandalous indeed.
But yeah, I'm quite excited about it. I've got this whole game in front of me, and knowing that people are in front of me and they're still loving it, which is reassuring. You know, sometimes games start strong and they kind of they fall away. I wasn't ever really expecting that to be the case with this one, but it's nice to hear that it just gets better and better and better. And all the different ways in which you can tackle it is interesting, because I don't know what my playstyle is. My playstyle is sort of, I start off going, oh yeah, I want to collect everything, and then I lose interest. I always get to the end of the main story, but the second I finish the main story, I never pick a game up again. It just doesn't happen. I was trying my very, very best to get 100% on LEGO Star Wars The Skywalker Saga. That's kind of just fallen by the wayside. I really want to go back and do it. There's just something about those LEGO games, but I keep finding things like Zelda to play instead. Out of curiosity, you said you've been playing, you've been carrying around your Switch. How have you primarily played it? Handheld or docked? Because I've only played it docked, and I don't want to play in handheld.
Yeah, so I kind of initially had the intention of playing it handheld, because that is how I play my Switch 90% of the time, because I find a lot of the games on there, just if it's not an indie game, pixel based, if it's like a 3D game, they've done a lot of work to make it work on, you know, the Switch, and once you stretch that out, their handiwork starts to become evident. So I'd plan to do this primarily handheld, especially because I find Breath of the Wild was such a pick-up-and-play game for me. But I've done a stonking amount of this on the TV. It's looking very, very nicely. I know it's using, I think, NVIDIA's VFR technology to kind of upscale it. And yeah, or excuse me, AMD's VFR technology to kind of upscale the resolution when need be to 1080p, so it can kind of get a little bit better performance. But yeah, mainly docked, which has been surprising.
Yeah, I don't know why. I remember I played the last one, I think primarily docked, but did do a fair bit handheld, and it didn't really detract from the experience too much, but it's sort of, it was a different experience, and there's just something about the grandeur of this game, I just want to play it docked. Mm. I feel like it would just somehow lose something if it was on a small screen.
Yeah, what I find quite exciting about is I feel like the last game kind of dropped you in, and to be honest, I think Tears of the Kingdom does this a lot early on, when it's like, okay, the main goal is very much set in front of you, but immediately you get all of these different quests. And for me, that's what's happened, is there's one thing that pointed me in one direction of the map, and I just talked to random people, and then that sent me to, and just ended up having this cascading a series of events where there is my own personal goal, which is really dumb. It was literally just get a band together, and it sent me literally around the entire map, of not just forcing me, but you know, I was like, oh, I'll go here, and then, you know, chat to this person and figure this all out, and then I bump into people along the way, and it's been all these little side quests, and that stuff has been really nicely for just, you know, doing tons of these side quests to, you know, get better stuff. And then I think once I get to the more main story stuff, then it'll probably move over to the kind of TV experience, which with Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom kind of being so pivotal to the Switch, it's interesting that it's able to have like big experiences that are, you know, you really want to do on the best screen you've got, and then has these little silly side attractions that are like, oh, I'll just do, you know, one or two of these on the bus.
That is beautifully, beautifully done. I'm resisting the urge to Google stuff, because I keep, the cute little bits of my brain keep going, oh, I wonder if I need to go and pick up, I know, go to a certain area map and do a certain quest to get some armor so I can tolerate, I don't know, I presume there's similar environments to the last one. I don't know, I'm guessing there's deserts where it's hot and snowy bits where it's cold and all that kind of good stuff, because you've got the temperature gauge. I presume that stuff all exists. It's like, oh, maybe I should go and seek all that stuff out. I wonder where to find it. And they keep going, no, don't do it. I don't want to know. I just want to stumble upon these things and organically find them.
Yeah, and I think what's, you know, this is a trust that Nintendo has built with me as a gamer, but, you know, there's an element of it being like, this is such a well-built game. The clues are here. It's not like they've just made it poorly. I know the clues are here if I'm missing something. Like, there's been one or two shrines that I've been like, I've struggled with. I'm like, unlike another game when I'm like, they might have just not been clear with it. I know this game has been built to such quality that I'm just not looking at it properly. And then it's like, when you find a solution, it's not like, well, that's ridiculous. I should have known that. It's more so like, oh, I'm an idiot.
Oh, I'm very much looking forward to my several hundred hours of gameplay in front of me, probably. Well, I think I don't know how many hours I've been to the last one, but there's going to be many, and it's going to be good. But in the meantime, we've now spent about 10 minutes talking about mostly that game, and I know in our notes it comes up a fair bit again, because that's pretty much dominating the headlines at the moment. However, I do think it's probably time that we dived into the news.
Tell us, the people want to know.
So, first up, Adam Kareem has announced Protodroid Delta for the Nintendo Switch, published by Humble Games. It's a 3D platform running game out on the 25th of May. And when I looked at this, I basically went, oh, it's Mega Man in 3D, which, or specifically Mega Man X in 3D. It's kind of got the visuals. It's got a lot of the same movements, but just imagine in an open 3D world. I think this looks really good.
Absolutely. It's definitely, you know, a simpler title. Still 3D, but, you know, maybe double A's, not anything fancy. But I was very much taken aback. You know, it really has that forward momentum that you, like, try to do when you think you've gotten good at a platforming game, where you're like, I'm just going to run through this, and then you die, like, immediately. But it has that forward momentum to it in of this platformer. It's, you know, not about, like, sitting back and, you know, firing off some shots. It's about constantly moving, constantly shooting. I'm taken by this one. I just hope it's not too overly priced, but Humble, they're quite good as a publisher for this sort of stuff.
They are. I think this is from, well, it's a solo guy, obviously. Adam Kareem is a solo developer, and I think I read somewhere that he was the first person to receive funding from Humble Games' Black Game Developer Fund. I think. And if I'm not wrong, that's really cool as well. There's a nice sort of, I'm going to say, backstory to this. That's maybe not quite the right word, but it just makes the game all the more impressive when, you know, it's a solo developer out there that's come up with this. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of following suit with that, you know, having a kind of black woman as a protagonist in of a game, you know, it's just something that we don't see as much as we should. So it's great to see that representation here.
Basically, we're saying, probably check this one out. You don't have long to wait. As we said, 25th of May. Next up, Puppet Combo has announced No One Lives Under the Lighthouse. It's a self-published game for Nintendo Switch. It's an eerie PS1-esque horror walking sim. It's out now already, 12:50. It's a slow burner, this one. This isn't, I don't think, things jumping out at you. It's not Resident Evil, but it's creepy and clawing and basically playing with madness, Anton.
Indeed. And what's quite impressive about this one is we've had a lot of games on this podcast and just on Nintendo Switch generally where, you know, it's described as a PS1 horror game. However, this one is again giving another spin on it, and it's been impressive to see all the different spins we've had on this era of horror. And I think what's really built in here is the atmosphere. It's not kind of at night and using, you know, very dark shadows and low render distances. You know, it does have a bit of low render distances, but it's like misty mornings. It's got a different era of creepiness. And I think, you know, it has these somewhat large spaces, which is kind of a little bit different from a lot of these sort of horror games where it's, you know, put you in a small space and call it a day. I'm very impressed by the atmosphere and sound design here.
Yeah, do you feel that they've nailed the PS1 with this one? I can't remember what game we talked about last week, but there was something that was PS1 last week that just didn't sit right. It was all wobbly and it just had weird visuals, whereas this one looks like a true PS1 game. Although I do have some concerns about it in as much as it is a very deliberately very dark game. And even on my very, very bright screen, I'm sort of looking at the YouTube trailer on here, I'm struggling to see the detail, and there's a couple of bits where they go around the highlights. I think it's like a rope on a wall or a satchel or something like that in what looks to be pitch blackness. I literally can't see a thing, and if I was trying to play this game, it would drive me nuts. If you're trying to play it in handheld mode on an old Switch, you're not going to see a thing unless you're sitting in a dark room.
Indeed. So, you know, hopefully, you know, you've got the time to do this in the proper horror setting, which is ideally in an abandoned or empty house by yourself, when, you know, every little creak and noise behind you can really set off a spooking.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomised genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
Yeah, and if you don't want spooky, instead you'd rather have some little blue cartoons running around, then Awesome Studios have announced The Smurfs 2, The Prisoner of the Green Stone, for the Nintendo Switch, published by Microids. It is a sequel to, was it last year that they released Mission Flyleaf? I can't remember. Either way, it's a sequel, and they've got four players, I think it's probably co-op in here. Platformy goodness? Well, I say platformy goodness, platform action. I don't have very high hopes, because let's face it, any Smurf game we've ever seen has been a bit on the, not shonky side, but they've always let us down.
What you're saying, Smurfs on Atari was brilliant. Nevertheless, at the end of the day, this one will be shovelware. It's pretty shiny looking shovelware, but I wouldn't have the highest hope. Microids can do good games occasionally, but they've done a lot of rubbish at times as well. So, you know, probably not one for anyone who's listening to this podcast, but I'm sure maybe a gift or, you know, a younger child may enjoy or find some joy in seeing little blue people that aren't avatars.
Indeed. Well, this one comes out, we haven't actually got a proper date yet, but 4:15. Basically, in time for those young people to get a Christmas present. That's what we're saying. NetherRealm Studios have announced, you ready? Mortal Kombat 1 for the Nintendo Switch, published by Warner Brothers Games. It's being released on the 19th of September, and I have to admit, this did confuse me until I looked into it and went, oh yeah, okay, so it's basically rebooting the whole franchise. So this is the newest Mortal Kombat game, even though it's got the number 1 behind it. Who came up with this?
You know, I don't hate it. I don't hate it, mainly as, you know, if they hadn't done the kind of, I think it was the 2009 Mortal Kombat, you know, it's already, you know, it would have been the third just Mortal Kombat if they'd just called it Mortal Kombat. So I don't mind them calling it one, and it'll mean the logos are consistent when they do 2 and 3. So I'm not entirely against this one, Al.
But the last one we got, was it not Mortal Kombat 11? Was that
indeed,
the last one
yes.
we had? So we've gone from 1-1 to 1.
Yeah, I think my only problem is they've went from Roman numerals to numbers. But maybe that's how they differentiate this new franchise. Nevertheless, what can we say? It's nice to see a kind of slightly more straightforward story to Mortal Kombat, as the timeline and story of 11 is a little bit bonkers and off the rails, as was 10, and I think 9 started the time-traveling shenanigans. Nevertheless, the story of Mortal Kombat is a little off the rails, so maybe grounding it a little. Nice to see all these original characters that haven't travelled through time or been reborn and all that nonsense. And this trailer is appropriately gruesome. I'm very pleased to see that we're getting it on Nintendo Switch. Mortal Kombat 11 was already quite an impressive title in terms of port, getting it on Nintendo Switch, so having this as well, I'm excited. I'm very impressed that Warner Bros. Are delivering on bringing this to us.
I know, so much blood and guts. The trailer is excessively violent. Don't let young children watch it, they will be scarred for their lives. But yeah, it does look very good, and I was quite pleased to see that nowhere in the trailer did I see the words cloud version. It did not appear, which makes me think that this is probably going to run natively, but I don't think we've had that confirmed. But they've also not said cloud, so go with it, native.
It's going to be heresy if they try and do cloud. Like, the latency on a fighting game, Oh, I can see the pitchforks already, but who knows? There's got to be one fighting game that's going to try it.
They're going to do it. It's guaranteed at some point, but probably not with this one. Nintendo have released a whole bunch of good old-fashioned Mario classics for the Game Boy Advance onto the Switch Online. So we have now got Super Mario Advance from 2001, Super Mario World 2, which I think is called Super Mario Advance 2, maybe, from 2001, and Yoshi's Island Super Mario Advance 3, 2002, all coming out. And I have to say, I was kind of unaware of these, because I didn't play anything on the Game Boy from the Color, pretty much up to the Switch. The Game Boy just didn't exist for me. I missed all of it. And these look like proper old-school games, and I want to play them. I haven't got the expansion pack, but they just look like my happiness, my happy place, like my childhood. They're beautiful, Anton.
Indeed. You know, at the time, there was some humming and hawing, because at the end of the day, they are just ports of Super Nintendo, and in the case of Super Mario Advance 1, NES games, but with shinier 32-bit graphics. But at the end of the day, they're absolute classics. There's no way around it. Getting them on Nintendo Switch is also brilliant. The one thing I am hoping for is that the port of Super Mario World, aka Super Mario Advance 2, within of America and Japan, they had these like e-reader cards that you could plug in. You know, you'd have the game, you'd plug in the e-reader, and then you'd swipe these cards and you'd get exclusive levels that were never in Super Mario World. So I'm really, really hoping that they've included these in all these ports, but I have not learnt yet of that ability. So if you've got it, do send us a tweet or a Facebook. That is NSUK Podcast, because that might get me to renew my expansion pass, Al.
they look brilliant. It would be brilliant if they are in there, and I guess we'll just have to wait and find out if they are. I have to say, actually, this is slightly heretic, but one of my favourite Mario games of all time is probably Super Mario 2.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah, it's such a good game. And Super Mario Advance, from what I can see, is pretty much a sequel to that, right?
It is, I believe, a port.
Is it just a port of it?
Yeah, I think it's a port with new graphics, kind of like Super Mario All-Stars.
Oh, you see. Yeah, see, this is where my knowledge is lacking. I never played them on the Advance, but it looks so good.
Yeah, I remember after they did New Super Mario Bros., you know, kind of circa like 2007, 2008, a couple years removed of that DS game, there's rumors of a new game coming, and I was like praying it would be, you know, New Super Mario Bros. 2, you know, kind of do it that way, get that gameplay in of New Super Mario Bros. 2, but never quite happened. You know, the only way, yeah, just never happened. Not even a new Super, Super Mario Maker theme.
Oh, yeah, just check. You are spot on. Yeah, Super Mario Advance was indeed just a souped-up version of the NES Super Mario Bros. 2, which explains why it looked really good and why I wanted to play it.
Cool. Now you can.
And now I can. Okay, let's move on to a bit more general news. So, in an interview this week with Game Informer, Eiji Onuma stated that, just like the Ocarina of Time established a new format for several subsequent Zelda games, Breath of the Wild is the new format for the foreseeable future of Zelda. I'm not massively surprised by that, and I'm quite pleased by that, because, let's face it, it is a fantastic platform.
Absolutely. It's such a strong foundation, and you know, it was an innovation, you know, the leap from, you know, taking Skyward Sword to Breath of the Wild was absolutely huge. And that sort of leap could not have happened going from, you know, when Wind Waker was in development. You know, that's kind of a revolution that took years to formulate and technology needed to build up to. What's interesting about this for me, I think, will be seeing if they're going to stick with the Breath of the Wild engine for the next game, or are they going to start from a new foundation entirely? Because although Ocarina of Time established a format, you know, we had Ocarina of Time, Majora's Mask was kind of built in the same engine, the same way that Tears of the Kingdom's built in the same engine. Wind Waker, Twilight Princess, Skyward Sword, different tech underneath. Do you think they'll do the same for Zelda? Do you think the next game will be built on what came before, or fresh start?
That's a really interesting question. I hadn't considered it, and now you've mentioned it, it would make sense if they carried it on, because it is such a beautiful game, and the aesthetics, they work. Even in a high-end system, the aesthetic that they use works quite well, so I can see the engine has a lot of flexibility in it. Would they want to go to a sort of a next-gen engine? Would it benefit the game? I don't know. Zelda wouldn't work photorealistic. Zelda pretty much has to be cartoony in some way, I think. And I think this one works well. That's a really, really interesting question. I genuinely don't know which way I would go on that. What about you?
I could see it going one of two routes. I could see them doing a trilogy. If they're continuing on the Switch, I could see them doing the trilogy of, you know, free games using this engine. Alternatively, I think the engine will stay, but they could maybe like update the assets. But to be honest, we've seen from emulators that the existing engine scales really, really, really nicely to higher resolutions. So, you know, they could just keep on building on it.
Yeah, I mean, they're at the point now where everything is vast, it's expansive, it does everything you could possibly ask of it. Chuck in some fancy lighting and various bits and pieces, it's doable. Bolt on a few bits and pieces to it, and it can do a lot.
My next question for you, Al, is in the same way that the classic kind of SNES era Zeldas have managed to kind of live on, you know, those top-down 2D ones with, you know, Link's Awakening most recently and, you know, Link Between Worlds, do you think we could see three versions of Zelda coexisting? You know, that kind of Ocarina of Time era Zelda, you know, a 2D Zelda and a Breath of the Wild-esque Zelda? Or do you think that this newer sort of 3D Zelda has cannibalized the older cell of 3D Zelda?
I'd say that's absolutely what's happened. I think top down works because it's so entirely different, but the old style 3D Zelda is not a million miles away from the current 3D Zelda. Realistically, I mean, I know they're very different games and very different takes, but realistically, it's more just an evolution. It's not a complete step change, in my opinion. You feel free to disagree with me.
No, I think I'm very much with you. I think if they ever did another 3D Zelda, unless they went properly retro with it or went for like a very cute Wind Waker aesthetic, the comparisons would just be to the modern Breath of the Wild-esque Zeldas that, you know, it would almost just get cannibalized even if it was an incredible game. I think people's expectations would really, really hurt it. I think what's more likely is we get more 2D ones to kind of coexist, fill the gaps in between the big 3D ones. And who knows, those 2D ones might take more inspiration from the newer Zeldas because there's a lot of conventions of, you know, you start the game with a green tunic and that's it, that could be shattered in a 2D game that could open up new possibilities.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see them do more with the Link's Awakening engine that they built for the little remaster, the remake they did, because it was so beautiful and there's a lot of opportunity that they could explore, give us some new Zelda titles based on that game. Why not? I'd love that. And that could quite happily sit side by side with current Tears of the Kingdom and any subsequent game we may get in the same franchise.
Absolutely. You know, and a little curveball, I still want that Zelda Maker. That would be good.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about the online aspect of the Nintendo Switch Online subscriber-only software, Pac-Man 99. Do you remember Pac-Man 99? Do you still play it?
I've maybe put on hold a little bit of Tetris here and there. I did enjoy my Super Mario 35, but Pac-Man 99, just a little bit of gaming.
Yeah, I think I played it once. But if you're a dedicated gamer, you're loving your Pac-Man 99, well, I've got some bad news. You can only play online until Sunday, October 8th, at which point they're basically going to turn the online version off, leaving behind only the paid additional content that you can play pretty much for as long as you want. But yeah, online, keep going, which is sad.
Yeah, it's indeed very, very sad. You know, battle royales are the worst for getting shut down just because the player base is not there. You need a lot of players and they need to be relatively close to you for latency, even if it is something like this. You know, if there's that many players, you just need the best connection possible to what players you're playing with. Disappointing that they're taking it down, but it's the nature of a kind of live service like this. But great that they're letting you play with the content you have in some capacity. It's not completely gone. You know, I'm just hoping for these big, massive, expansive free-to-play games that we've got now, like, you know, Fortnite. What happens to Fortnite once people have sunk, you know, thousands and thousands of pounds into it and, you know, it comes to end of life? Will they give them a, you know, a free mode to, you know, just play around with their costumes? It's unlikely. Who knows?
Who knows indeed. Blizzard, well, they've cancelled something as well this week. They have cancelled the PvE, so the player versus environment, hero mode for Overwatch 2. Instead, they're basically supposedly focusing on big story missions, new cinematics, co-op events, and single-player hero mastery missions. Now, having never played Overwatch or Overwatch 2, I have no idea what any of that means. What on earth is a hero mastery mission, and how is that different to PvE hero mode?
Yeah, so this is very rubbish. It's almost like they're purposely devaluing their companies to make them cheaper for Microsoft. Or stopped caring, I don't know, but this is just awful, awful news. You know, they announced Overwatch 2 as Overwatch plus PvE. That was the whole selling point. And then it got closer and closer to launch, and there was a little bit of like, where is Overwatch ready? You know, they announced this ages ago. And then they're like, PvE's, you know, we're delaying it for launch, but, you know, we've launched Overwatch 2, which is identical to Overwatch 1, but, you know, you play with one less player in your team, but it's coming, and now they've just cancelled it. Like, this is just such a slap in the face. Thankfully, it's a free-to-play title, so, you know, it's not like people paid £50 for this PvE experience that's never coming, that they promised would be coming several times. but really, really rubbish. You know, these story events are not, you know, not what people were really excited for Overwatch. You know, the thing that made Overwatch so great was that, you know, they took a team-based shooter, which was a rife market at the time before Battle Royales really took the spotlight, and then did a fantastic job in the way that Team Fortress had done, and nobody else really has done, of making these really engaging characters. And having PvE story mode would have been a great place to explore and get to know these characters better. And now that potential's been squandered, and to be honest, they've just burnt through a lot of goodwill of their user base. You know, next game they promise, if it's not then their launch, nobody's going to believe them that it ever will come.
Yeah, disappointing. But at the end of the day, it is a free-to-play game, so we can't really complain too much about it, can we?
Yeah, I think we can. Because people are paying for microtransactions on this game. They're investing into the service.
Well, I mean, it's a fair point, but are they investing into it because they just want to get the skins for the multiplayer bit? How much are people genuinely really invested in this, expecting the PvE to come? Really?
Very true. If you've been playing, do let us know and how you're feeling. Are you mad quite like right. me, or just cool like Al?
Well, this next story makes me a little bit happy, because I still have this sitting in a drawer downstairs. The Wonderful 101 Remastered, woo, DLC, titled The Wonderful One After School Hero, is available for free. It features super-duper fun side-scrolling laser-shooting action. Yes, that is exactly what Anton has written in the notes, and I presume Anton has got that from a press release somewhere.
That is an exact quote. It is basically an entirely new game. It is a 2D platformer. To be honest, I think if they'd released it on its own, it would have gotten massacred. It was part of their Kickstarter bonuses. How are you feeling about this? Because I won't lie, I feel like if I wanted DLC for a game, I would want it to be DLC, not an entirely different game. But I guess it's fun to have another game, but you know, it's not the same game that people fell in love with and kickstarted.
Oh, I'm totally psyched about this. I mean, nice. I think it's awesome. Why wouldn't you want something different? I mean, the Wonderful 101 as a game is fine, it's good, you play through the story. If someone wants to give me something extra for free that's a little bit different and gives me a completely different gaming experience, I'm not going to complain. I just think that this is cool.
I suppose so. It is free. That, you know, can't complain there. That's good.
I'm not entirely sure sort of why they decided to do it, but I'm not going to knock them for it. And all power to them. I'm just kind of quite glad I still got the game sitting downstairs, because in all honesty, I'd forgotten I even owned it until this story came up. I played maybe about an hour, 2 hours of the game when I got it, and I've never gone back to it since. Shh, don't tell them.
And you paid so much for it, getting it the Kickstarter way.
Like 20 quid. It wasn't that much. It was fine. Didn't cost me much to do that.
I'm remembering scandals where the Kickstarters paid more than paying customers and got it later. Scandals of NSUKP Pass. Not our scandals, but other people's scandals.
Indeed. I think I actually had a relatively good experience with my one, because whenever I bought into it and whatever price I paid, I didn't miss out. I was a happy camper. It was all good.
Excellent.
Should we talk about Turbo Mode?
Oh, let's go.
Yes.
No, done. Oh, you want more?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's
yeah.
looking at me. He's giving me a look. He wants more. All right, okay. Let's do a proper Turbo one then. So I will read through a whole lot of stories, and then you can pick out which ones you actually want to talk about afterwards. Spoiler alert in advance, there's an awful lot of Zelda in here, because, as we said, much of the news is Zelda. Are you ready?
I am very much so.
You can now get a glow-in-the-dark The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom keychain for 600 platinum points from My Nintendo. Every Legend of Zelda amiibo has been restocked at the My Nintendo store. The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom has sold over 10 million copies worldwide in its first 3 days, making it the fastest selling game in the history of the Legend of Zelda series. The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom is the 7th biggest Japanese game launch of all time, and the largest Legend of Zelda launch in the region. Eiji Onuma has said that he has completed The Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom about 20 times, and recommends taking your time instead of rushing straight to the end. Doug Bowser made a slightly amusing spelling mistake this week while tweeting about Legend of Zelda Tears of the Kingdom, mistakenly typing Highland instead of Hyrule. Whoops, the internet found that one quite amusing. The Legend of Nayuta Boundless Trail, see, got you there. It has received a new trailer and a release date of the 19th of September. Team Go Rocket is back, bringing Shadow Raids to Pokemon Go, and Warhammer 40,000 Bolt Gun has released an extended gameplay trailer. Gareth Cocker, Grant Kidhope, and Yoko Shimomura have won an Ivers Award for Best Original Video Game Score for their work on Mario & Rabbids Sparks of Hope. Cadence of Hyrule developer Brace Yourself Games have announced layoffs affecting a portion of their staff, unfortunately, but the Super Mario Bros. Movie is now the highest grossing movie ever in Mexico, in US dollars, with $82.4 million taken in. It surpasses the previous record holder, which was Spider-Man No Way Home, which earned $81.156 million. And the Super Mario movie is now available to rent or buy in the US and Canada on VOD, but not here in the UK. Eschatos, I think is how you pronounce it, is receiving a physical release courtesy of Strictly Limited? Yeah, Strictly Limited Games. Thank you very much. Pre-orders are now open. And finally, Power Wash Simulator is getting a SpongeBob SquarePants DLC pack just in time for this summer. It's quite a bit in there, Anton. What would you like to talk about?
Indeed. You know, it is lovely to see Power Wash Simulator get some more DLCs. It is such a guilty pleasure game. Very lovely to see.
And are you going to be cleaning Bikini Bottom?
Maybe. I still haven't gotten through everything in Power Washing Simulator. It's got some really hard, dumb challenges in it, and I need to return to it. But, you know, it's got co-op, so, you know, it's a good title play. I love to see Grant Kirkhope getting recognized. I feel sad. I feel like it's almost like the meaning of video games, the lack of recognition some people within of this industry have. Like, I feel like he should be up there with the Hans Zimmers in, of the world. You know, it's just such a great track record of just producing these bangers. And then, you know, glad to see Tears of the Kingdom doing very, very well. I won't lie, it still makes me sad because I was looking at all those numbers and it's about the same as Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, which just wasn't a very polished title.
Seriously?
Yeah. For instance, for the number one biggest Japanese launch of all time, it was Pokemon Scarlet and Violet. And I was like, wow, they didn't even finish that one.
Good lord, this game deserves so much better than that.
Indeed. And I think one of the surprise hits of this week, and it was also a surprise hit the last time we talked about it, was the new Warhammer game. Like, there's been so many Warhammer games, and I just kind of, I admittedly don't give them the love they really deserve, or kind of pass on them, because there's just, you know, as an outsider, I don't really see what's exciting. But this one looks to be standing on its own, very Doom. It's over the top 90s, you know, early 90s shooter vibes, but in the modern day, and, you know, looks to have a nice bit of humor to it. So I was impressed by that one. Now, how about yourself? What's jumping out to you this week from Turbo Mode?
I mean, there's a fair bit in there. I cannot believe that Eiji Inuma has played the Tears of the Kingdom 20 times, has completed it 20 times over. Knowing how long it takes to complete Zelda games, that is a phenomenal amount of gaming. I mean, how does anybody have time to do that, let alone someone who's busy? Oh. I don't get it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, that's, I think, impressive for the fact that, you know, that's just an amount of time for, you know, a game director of his stature to be paid for. You know, Nintendo could not afford for somebody to pay that game at his salary that much. So I imagine a lot of this is on his own time, which means that it's managed to entertain him enough times to do it that, you know, that many times, which is remarkable.
That is someone properly dedicated to gaming. I've never completed a game 20 times. In fact, I'm not entirely sure I've ever completed a game twice, let alone 20 times. I tend to complete a game and move on.
Really? Not even like an old SNES title?
I don't think I've completed any of them twice. I mean, I may have, to be fair, I played completed Super Mario Bros. 2 two or three times, but that's, oh, and I completed GTA 5 twice and Vice City two or three times, so I'm kind of telling a lie, but 20, never reached those dizzying heights ever.
Yeah, especially for a game this long. Like, I've heard some of the play times people are putting into it, and even now I'm like 20 hours in and I've scraped I've like opened the can, that's all I've done.
That is just nuts. I do agree with you as well that the SpongeBob DLC, as much as I'm not a big SpongeBob fan, I do think it looks cool. The very, very short little trailer they put onto Twitter basically has you with your fancy looking power washer under the sea in Bikini Bottom, and it just looks wonderfully hilarious. What a great premise. I don't know who came up with that one. Don't know how they made it happen, but it's just brilliant. I love that. And then I think the other thing I wanted to ask you about was why you think Brace Yourself have had to lay people off. I mean, do we think the Cadence of Hyrule didn't do as well as they thought? Do they just not have enough games in the pipeline? I mean, it's kind of a sad indication that an indie developer that produced a fairly sizable game is struggling.
Indeed, it's very disappointing, especially as I know they did a whole whack of free DLC for Crypt of the Necrodancer relatively recently. The only thing I can suspect is that Rift of the Necrodancer is taking longer to develop than they thought. Maybe they thought they would get it out the door first earlier, or maybe expected that the, you know, free DLC they did for Crypt of the Necrodancer would have maybe gave it a little bit of a boost in sales that never fulfilled. But disappointing to see, because they've only produced gold so far. I'm just hoping Rift of the Necrodancer puts them in a good position for the future.
Yeah, I mean, they've half the size of the studio. Apparently, they've got rid of about 50... Got rid of, that's a horrible phrase. They've had to lay off about 50% of their staff. I mean, that's a sizable downsize. I mean, it's not just getting rid of one or two people. That's big.
Yeah, and it's just such a shame to see, you know, happening from one of the best developers kind of in the indie space right now.
It is indeed. Well, that was a bit of a bummer note. Should we talk about rumours? Because generally they're a bit more positive.
Yeah, let's go.
Now, I'm not normally one for gossip, but...
Well, we've got one. We've only got one, I'm afraid. And it's kind of about something we've already talked about, so it's a relatively short rumour, but let's just dive into it anyway. An Amazon Italy listing has leaked some guest characters in Mortal Kombat 1, which include Peacemaker, Homelander from The Boys, and that's just so cool because I love that show, Omni-Man from The Invincibles, and additionally it appears that Jean-Claude Van Damme may be featured as a skin for Johnny Cage. What do you make of this?
You know, it's very cool. I do miss the horror villains as the killers or kind of guest characters, but, you know, I'll take edgy superheroes any day, so this is very fun. And yeah, you know, Peacemaker makes lots of sense. You know, it's a Warner Bros. IP. And then Homelander and Omni-Man. You know, I think there's probably plenty of fanfic of those two fighting anyway, so, you know, bring them together.
I'm just intrigued to see what they do with Homelander, because let's face it, The Boys is a pretty brutal, gruesome, gory, over-the-top show as it is. Put him into the world of Mortal Kombat and things are going to get ugly.
I could see as such. Any of them would be pretty brutal. Peacemaker is, I guess, the most friendly of them, but, you know, it's a little violent.
Either way, it is all good. Now, it's at this time we would normally go to Mike and his deals of the week, but, well, as we've already established, Mike is defected or been captured or, I don't know, he's somewhere in the wrong place, which means we don't have a deals of the week. So let's move on to the quiz instead. No. Hold on, we can't do that either.
What's the question this week?
Well, I mean, I can ask you, but Mike kind of needs an opportunity to kind of win as well. It's a bit unfair.
But what if I do closest to the pin?
I mean, I could do a closest to the pin for fun, but you're not getting any points for it.
I'll wait until there's points. Grumble, grumble.
Oh, yeah, I know. It kind of sucks. We need Mike back. He needs to be released and come back. Well, that suggests he's being held against. I can't do that. We might get in trouble internationally. We might need Mike to make his way back from, I'm just going to say, Korea. That's nice and vague.
Nevertheless, if you do want to hear more of Mike, we did manage to get him on Last Call by Alistair. That is Last Call 206, so that's out now. Never mind the full back catalogue we've got for our Patreon. So if you're not familiar, Last Call is kind of a post-show. We did it pre-show this time, but it's usually a post-show to this show where we talk about literally anything. There's a bunch of other rewards like getting the podcast as free, listening live, friend code, show notes, and that is just a few of the extra rewards you get for just £2 per month, which is basically free at this point with the raising costs of everything. But, you know, that's business, baby.
That is business. And if you don't want to support us on Patreon, we very much value any reviews you would like to leave us, particularly on Apple Podcasts, because for whatever reason, that seems to be the thing that triggers ratings and gets you in front of people. That would be much appreciated. I think a lot of people have done it. We have a staggering number of reviews. It is wonderful. Thank you so much to everyone who has left them. But if you've not left one before, if you're new to the show and you didn't mind listening to us and you thought we were all right, we wouldn't mind getting a little review. That would be helpful. Failing which, if you just want to rant to us and tell us how terrible we are directly, there is an email address, podcast@nsukp.co.uk. We will take all feedback, all criticism, all praise, and anything else you want to say to us. I mean, if you just want to tell us about your lost sock, when we were here to listen, frankly.
Absolutely. Emotional support group for lost socks, so we can be Lost Socks Anonymous.
That's the one. I
haven't lost any socks. I don't know what we're talking about.
I may or may not have lost socks. I have no idea. My drawer is full of all of the same sock, so I can always pull out a pair. They always match because I only own one type of sock.
Yeah, I've got a couple different brands, so I've got a little orphan box for when they get lost and then eventually another one turns up.
Oh, you have a little orphan box. That's the cutest thing ever.
You know, cute or sad, who knows? We'll figure out.
How often do they get reunited?
Maybe like every like month I'll do like a wee scan through and see if there's any matching pairs in the orphan box.
That's awesome, Anton. That's just made my day. Thank you
very
much.
You might get a hole in one, you chuck one, and then you know it goes in the orphan box until another one in that matching style, you know, dies.
Well, on that note, I think that's probably a wonderful place to end the show, so I'm just going to say cheerio.
Au revoir.